Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 85 and a half. That's right, it is bonus edition post-UFC 205 content. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffey, well, he's still not with me. He's doing important stuff right now at the Mandalay Bay at the MMA Junkie Radio Studio. He's actually doing some cool little technical stuff behind the scenes. So if you happen to be a fan of MMA Junkie Radio as well, you may be seeing some new things over there that my man Cole Coffey is handling right now. So he and I will be back on the road together next week as we head down to Sao Paulo, Brazil for UFC Fight Night 100. But right now, it's all about UFC 205, the biggest event in UFC history, no doubt, and it delivered. Now, let me tell you, I'm actually already back in Las Vegas. It's a little before 11 o'clock in the morning here, and we were just working so damn late last night, I couldn't get to the podcast before I had to get on the plane to come home. So I'm actually already home, but I'm still having a frosty beverage. Secondly, I'm still feeling the excitement from last night. I mean, to me, UFC 205 was everything in the world that we had hoped it could be. We built this card up to be something amazing. You know, it was bigger than UFC 200 in a lot of ways. Historical significance of being in Madison Square Garden for the very first time, of, you know, being the first sanctioned show in New York, of course, and then this mega card that the UFC put together. And a couple little changes there at the last minute. You know, you had some freak injury type stuff, some medical suspension stuff, some weight cut stuff, but overall the card was so incredibly stacked that it still came out to be a star-studded affair, and it delivered from start to finish. But nothing, of course, will be bigger than Conor McGregor becoming the first man in UFC history to hold UFC belts in two different divisions simultaneously, and he did it with just an absolutely scintillating performance. You know, it's funny. I don't know how you could not be just incredibly amazed by what he did in there. I picked Conor McGregor by second round TKO, no less. I mean, nailed it on the head. Got my prediction exactly right. And yet still could never have projected that it would go like that. That he would come up, it's just so calmly and operating so smoothly and efficiently, flicking out that left hand with ease, and seemingly every time it landing, just dumping Eddie Alvarez on the floor. I mean, five knockdowns in a round and a half. It's incredible. I know that Conor McGregor has his detractors. I know there's people that have gone stale of his act. Hell, if you listen to the pre-fight show, the pre-fight press conference kind of bugged me. I thought it was a little too much. The story was getting a little played, that the approach was getting a little old to me. But put the theatrics aside and just watch what happened in the cage. Phenomenal. I don't know how you can continue to doubt Conor McGregor. If you're one of these people that is continuing to make excuses and say why he doesn't deserve the recognition that a lot of people are giving him, just stop doing it. Stop doing it, because you're robbing yourself of an opportunity to see something special right here in front of your eyes. This guy, the moment that he secured the victory, scaled the fence, had the two belts, finally, after much effort, and after Tyron Woodley, maybe not, let him have it, but maybe a little bit upset along the way. But, I mean, that's special stuff. I was telling a couple people last night, I feel like, you know, we always try to find something significant about a fight. We try to tell you, you know, the young Mike Bond will come up with some incredible stats about why this is the first that or the best that or the biggest this or what have you. And we're looking for reasons to say something is special, why something's cool, why something is great. You don't need any of that here. It's two belts at one time. No matter what you have to say about how he got there, about whether or not he deserved to be there or not. I think we've seen at this point, you know, deserve is a word you almost need to take out of your vocabulary. You don't necessarily just earn it, you know, through your wins and losses. You got to talk your way there. It's got to be a fight people want to pay for. UFC President Dana White said 205 broke the records. We don't know the exact number yet, but broke the record. It's going to be the highest selling pay-per-view ever. Unbelievable. Stop doubting Conor McGregor. You're ruining the opportunity to see something special and to live this moment, because it's incredible. I mean, think about how brash and bold this guy was. Conor McGregor came into the UFC and said right away, I'm going to hold two belts. I did it in Cage Warriors. I'm going to do it in the UFC as well. And I, for one, thought it was crazy. Thought it would never happen. Appreciated it. Loved the effort. Loved the claims he was making. Loved the confidence. Man, it's been such a fun ride to see him, you know, from the very beginning in Sweden and the 60 G's, baby, and the tree people died to make this pocket watch. And, you know, to see his evolution into the biggest star in mixed martial arts right now. And, you know, with Floyd Mayweather on the sidelines, technically retired at this point in time, I guess you could say that Conor McGregor is the biggest star in all of combat sports. And that is incredible. Just stop doubting the man. Yes, are there some fights I'd still like to see? Of course. Yes, did he get some fortuitous circumstances along the way? Yes. But nothing was handed to him. He earned every single thing he got. And I just think the chance to see it all finally come to fruition in that building at Madison Square Garden, I mean, gosh, special stuff. Now, Eddie Alvarez, after that fight, certainly got touched up. I mean, it was incredible. Eddie looked to be in great shape. But as we talked about going in, you know, Eddie, despite being the 155-pounder, was not the bigger man. And Conor, a master of range, just, you know, staying just outside of the advances of Eddie Alvarez and then delivering that big left hand in return. Special stuff the way he does it. It does look so smooth. The power that he generates and the way he throws it, where it doesn't look like he's loading much up into the punches, but is able to just land flush and connect with perfect form. It's incredible. Brett Okamoto from ESPN was able to talk to Eddie Alvarez after the fight. We were not able. He did not come to the press conference, understandably so. I'm sure, number one, getting knocked down five times, probably needed to go to the hospital. Number two, after the media circus that was and his probably evident frustration, I doubt he wanted to sit down and talk to everybody, and I can't really blame him for that. I always have a lot of respect for people that show up to the post-fight press conference after a losing effort, but I never hold it against them if they don't, because I got to imagine that's about the worst thing in the world. But Eddie admitted to Brett Okamoto that he fought stupid, that he was supposed to be kicking, he was supposed to be wrestling, and he didn't do that. Instead, he came out, you know, looking to brawl, and I think once he got touched up, it just became even more so you know, he got away from the game, like, because he did throw a couple of leg kicks at first, and he was chopping that lead leg. Conor doesn't necessarily really check those kicks. He's got kind of a traditional karate type stance that he brings to the table, where he's got the wider look. And Eddie was doing a good job of chopping that early on, but once he got touched up, he tried to turn it to a brawl, and that didn't work out so well for him. I do wonder how much of that was. You know, we were trying to analyze the. You know, the psychology of the bout coming in. And I said all along, I thought Eddie Alvarez had done a fantastic job of deflecting everything from Conor McGregor. But I thought at that press conference, he started to crack a little bit. And that's another thing that I don't think you can take away from Conor McGregor. He's not only is he a master fighter, he's a master of the gamesmanship. He gets inside people's heads. People over and over admit it afterwards. They say, I didn't want to say that he got in my head, but damn it, he got in my head. That's a skill in itself. If you can get a guy to fight outside of his game plan, to do things he's not supposed to do because he's pissed off at you, because he's frustrated, that's genius. It's brilliant. And Conor McGregor is a master marketer as well. I mean, Tyron Woodley, this little beef they had on Twitter, this little beef they had at the weigh-ins, I mean, there's no real heat between Conor McGregor and Tyron Woodley, but I think Conor saw the opportunity to say, let me just plant a little seed. Let me just drop this in there and let people start thinking about it a little bit. And sure enough, you know, the guy's got two belts, one on each shoulder, and now people are trying to talk about potentially a third one as well. Whether or not he gets to that, we'll see. But let's talk about this first. History was made. First man to hold a UFC title in two divisions. So guess what? I'm going to give you a little insight on the MMA Junkie USA Today Sports Rankings. We are going to have him on the new rankings come out on Tuesday at number one in both the lightweight and the featherweight divisions. Now, why is that significant? Because we've always said we don't want a fighter ranked in two divisions, because it's kind of difficult to have a guy placed in two different spots. You know, Cowboy Cerrone is a guy, for instance, that's been going back and forth lately. But what we've been trying to do is gauge where they're going to be and where, you know, where they're saying their next fight's going to take place. You know, if they say, no, I'm going to continue with welterweight, you know, we leave them in welterweight. Just so, you know, A, it allows us to have more fighters in the rankings. B, it's just so tough. I mean, if a guy's ranked in two divisions and he wins a welterweight fight, but he's also ranked in lightweight, what does that do for his lightweight ranking? I mean, does it do nothing? It's another win. I mean, it's not in the division, but it's another win. So do you only count the wins that are in that division? So it just gets to be kind of confusing. I mean, rankings are tough enough as they are. I mean, everybody wants to gripe and moan about him anyway. But so we're going to do something pretty historical, and we'll have him ranked at number one in two different divisions. So look for that on Tuesday. But here's the big question. Where does he stand in the pound-for-pound rankings? Now, the pound-for-pound rankings in a lot of ways are silly. They really are. I mean, it's such a hypothetical argument. But nonetheless, we do them, and it is fun to debate and talk about. So where does he rank? Is he the number one pound-for-pound fighter on the planet? I mean, he's doing something that nobody else has ever done, and he continues to do it. I mean, the guy is fighting at featherweight. He's fought at featherweight. He still holds the title at featherweight, but holds the title at lightweight as well. You know, he's gone all the way up to welterweight. Granted, that may be against the light, but I mean, that's what you're saying, right? Doing things in different weight classes. I mean, that's the kind of activity and career path you want to reward in pound-for-pound rankings, right? So is he the number one pound-for-pound fighter on the planet right now? It seems a little bit bizarre, right? I mean, Mighty Mouse Johnson, good God, the guy that I believe is the number one pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, has been perfect in his UFC run. He hasn't suffered a loss along the way. He's such a complete mixed martial artist. Everything looks fantastic. This title run that he's on in his division is insane. To me, he's the number one guy on the planet. Now, I see the case for John Jones being the number one pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, too. Can't take away what he's accomplished. Now, he's done some silly things outside of the cage, but as far as what he's done inside of it, how do you take away from that? But now you got Conor McGregor, who is holding two UFC titles simultaneously. Incredible. It is incredible. And he didn't just barely beat Jose Aldo to get the title. He starched him. Now, that's a fight I wouldn't mind seeing again. Would it go different? Maybe. Eddie Alvarez. He didn't just squeak by him in a decision. He starched him. Dominated him. That's two different UFC champions that Conor McGregor has dominated. So is he the number one pound-for-pound fighter on the planet? I don't know. We're going to have some decisions. Gorgeous George Garcia of MMA Junkie Radio does kind of head up our rankings panel. Rankings are really important to him. He really enjoys it. So he likes taking control of the entire thing and soliciting our feedback as well, but really being the guy that runs point on that. So I'm anxious to see what he thinks. A couple of our staff members have already weighed in on what their thoughts are, but I'm anxious to see how it comes out. I'll be honest, I'm still going back and forth in my own head. I feel like Demetrius Johnson is the best pound-for-pound fighter on the planet. But, man, Conor McGregor is the definition of pound-for-pound right now, right? Moving up and down, and as he says, you know, staying as busy as a champion in any weight class, and he fights in every weight class. So it's amazing. 205, this performance will live in my memory for a long time. It was an honor to be there cage side, and just incredible to see Conor McGregor do exactly what he promised from the time he came into the promotion. And now, big things on the horizon. He admits, publicly admitting that he does have a kid on the way with his longtime girlfriend. Fatherhood is impending, although he didn't seem incredibly sure about what the delivery date was. He'll probably want to get that figured out pretty quick. But making some pretty interesting demands. He wants a piece of the promotion. He wants to be a shareholder in the UFC, and I'll tell you what, if anybody deserves it, it's Conor McGregor. The guy, as he said, the financial documents that Ben Folks and Stephen Morocco were able to obtain and describe and lay out to you in incredible detail, they show how important Conor McGregor is to this company, and he knows it. He knows it. He's in a place to demand it. Interesting times. Will it happen? I don't know. Now, listen, I've had a lot of off-record conversations with Dana White about this, and he said, listen, I like Conor McGregor. I do. You know, the guy is something special. And, yeah, is he tough to deal with sometimes? Sure. You know, you've heard Dana say in the past, some of the biggest superstars are like artists, something a little bit different, a little bit special. And I think he knows that it's kind of tough to deal with Conor McGregor sometimes. But at the end of the day, I think Dana White is smart enough to know that Conor McGregor puts dollars in the bank. And what makes dollars make sense, right? So you got to find a way to deal with it. So, man, just excited to see what comes next for Conor McGregor, because there's a lot of options on the table. But first, let him soak up what he accomplished. amazing. Conor McGregor walked into the post-fight press conference, set up both his belts himself. PR staff will usually come in and try to do that, but he was carrying both his belts in. He wanted to have them on each shoulder, as he said he would. Took his belts and was setting them up, and it was funny because I think somebody, there was a gentleman there to take his coat from him that he wore into the press conference, and he said, hang on, don't try to rush me. He was trying to take the coat from him. He said, don't rush me. Don't rush me. I'll take my time. He was setting things up, getting his belts established just the way he wanted. And it's funny, I got the opportunity to ask him the first question. I was sitting right there in front of him, and one of the belts was kind of between us. He kind of had to peer over it, and he had kind of a funny moment there to start the press conference. He's like, can you see me behind all this? You know, fantastic. So listen to what the notorious one had to say. Love him or hate him, he will forever be a part of UFC history.
Conor, you promised this moment from the beginning. Finally, it's been achieved.
Can you see me, right? Can you see me clear over here?
Nice. You promised this moment from the beginning, and of course, you had doubters all along the way. Now that you've achieved it, give us an idea of what the emotion is like.
Look, it feels great. It feels familiar. I saw it so clearly. I swear to God, I saw it so clearly, so consistently, until it's here in reality. So I've been saying this a long time. I'm very confident in my abilities and what I'm predicting I'm going to do. And I back it up. I back it up with work ethic. I back it up with hours upon hours of time and dedication. I never slip. I never take a second off this game. So I'm very, very satisfied, very grateful, very happy. But not surprised. You know what I mean? I knew it. I knew it was going to happen for me.
The fight tonight might have been your best performance yet on this run. I mean, did you see things playing out the way they did tonight with the left hand, you know, landing so frequently and so easily?
Uncomfortable with that style opponent. I don't know. I feel good. I feel like I'm only reaching my prime. I'm only 28, not long 28. So, I feel good.
You delivered on everything you promised, but you didn't deliver on the big announcement, I don't believe, that you promised us coming into this. Are you ready to make that?
No, you know, look, there's a few bombshells I wanted to hit, but then it was like, well, will I do it, will I don't do it? Well, I have a few announcements. One announcement, I'm going to be a daddy early next year. So, thank you. I'm crapping me jocks. I'm not gonna lie. I don't even know what way to take it. It's gonna mess with me head because I don't want to be bringing a child into anything like this. You know, I don't even know. Like, I don't want no little celebrity type shit. I hate all that. I don't want my family to be like that. So that's kind of a little thing in the back of my head. So I'm gonna just have this baby, take a little bit of time, and see what way I feel after that. And then that's it. They've got to come talk to me now because no one's came talk to me since the sale has happened. As a businessman, I've been approached as hello and that type of stuff. But I've earned something. Who owns the company now? There's people have shares in the company. Celebrities. Conan O'Brien owns the UFC nowadays. So where's my share? Where's my equity? If I'm the one that's bringing this, they've got to come talk to me now. That's all I know. I've got both belts, a chunk of money, a little family on the way. You want me to stick around? You want me to keep doing what I'm doing? Let's talk. But I want ownership now. I want equal share. I want what I deserve, what I've earned. So there's a little announcement for you.
It just lasted, Conor. I mean, you, everything that you promised, I said, you hear the vision, as far as we knew, it stopped here with two belts, you know, on your shoulder. What's the vision now? Certainly get to enjoy tonight, but can you give us an idea maybe where you do see yourself?
Yeah, you know, look, there's so many like hurdles to get to that, so I'm not in no hurry no more. You know what I mean? Like I said, I've a kid on the way, so I just want to see what happens with that, see how that makes me feel. You know what I mean? What way my mind will be then? So maybe the three will be next. Maybe the third one will be next. Maybe, I mean, there's options. There always is many options after these events, so I'm happy with that. Options are always a good thing, but I'm running it for real now. So they've got to come talk to me.
Conor, congratulations to your left. Congratulations, of course, on the belt and obviously on the baby. I'm kind of curious. you know, you said take some time off. You know, you've been so active. There's four fights within 11 months. How much time do you want to take off? Do you want to have a good rest? Do you want to be able to enjoy the birth of your child? I mean,
look, I'm fresh. A few knocks and bruises here and there. That's me right hand was banged up from the Diaz fight, and my left foot was banged up from the Diaz fight. So I was actually, this was out of action for the whole camp. That's where I developed that, putting the hand behind my back, because I was doing it in sparring, because sometimes I'd be sparring and then I'd jar it or I'd hit it and then it'd be swelling up in the middle of the rounds, and I just figured out ways to just fight around it. So like if the right hand was out of action, I'd bring in the right foot, or you know what I mean? When you go through these fights and these wars, something, you get knocks and bruises. One time something's good and then the next time it's not good. So you've got to like, I've got to tuck shots in me pocket for a while, but then I can take out some other shots. So if one limb is out of action, I've got many other limbs, and I've got many other ways to attack, many styles. That's the beautiful thing about this game. You can fight in many ways, and I can fight in all ways. So that's why I'm able to keep coming and keep doing these, doing this, and that's why it didn't sweat me. But other than that, like, even to be honest, I was icing it up until today, but it's actually all right now. I mean, I don't know, like, I can take a smack on it, so I'm brand new. There's not a fucking scratch on me. I've not been wobbled, but you know what I mean? I'm for a 28-year-old on top of the game with all the belts, all the money, all the numbers, in a game like this, there's not a fucking thing wrong with me. So I can keep going all day, but I'm aware of my worth, and now I've got a family. Now I've got a kid on the way, so I'm coming for mine now if you want me back.
You said before the fight you wanted to celebrate two titles before we started talking about, you know, surrendering titles, doing all these things. Dana's steadfast saying, you know, he still wants you to give up a title. But do you think it's going to be hard for the UFC to do that now, considering the way you did put Eddie Alvarez the way you did, the way you put Aldo away the way you did? I mean, it does kind of seem like you have, you know, cemented yourself, depending, you know, that you deserve to defend both belts.
Look, they didn't even want to give it to me in the octagon. What was that about? I was literally losing my head in there. I was thinking, if these don't have this second belt for me, and I said, I want to raise up them both belts, climb up on that cage, raise them up, one on one shoulder, one on the other. And they didn't have the belts. And then I was in the cage, and they was like, did you not bring your own one? I was like, what? Get their brand new ones. This is a multi-billion dollar company. You want to have them brand new ones sparkling when I arrive here. So I'm happy that they went and got one. But yeah, I don't know.
You know, it was Tyrone's
fight. Yeah, I heard that. So yeah, maybe that's a sign of things to come. Or what happened with that? That was a mad little one, was it? What happened with that? It was a draw.
Draw.
It was a good fight. Two solid competitors. Wonder Boy showed a lot of heart in there, and Tyrone strong with the overhand. Some good fights. Joanna and the two Polish ladies, got to respect the Polish representing their nation, and two women, two warriors going at it. Some great fights. Romero and Weidman, great fight. It was a good performance. I mean, what he was talking as well was, I mean, look, he's fought once in 8 years. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, he ain't fight too frequent for my liking. Like, for me to commit to something like that, I need to be solid proof that people are going to show up, and he's a consistent pull-out merchant. He had a good performance tonight, fair play to him. We'll see where it goes, but I need to see activity, I need to see consistency, I need to see me. You know what I mean? If you want me to come and change your life, if you want me to come pick you, you better have some damn reasons for me to do that. So we'll see how that goes.
Woodley said here he would fight you. He would take that.
I'm sure he fucking would. They all would. So look, like I said, I've got a million other hurdles before I even consider any of this. Whoever runs this whole shit now has got to come to me and give me the real slice, because that's what I've earned. I've earned this biggest gay, biggest everything. I don't even know what the pay-per-views are, but I know them pay-per-views are going to be big.
Connor, right here in the middle. You've been guilty, you said, that of not really stopping and smelling the roses and taking it all in during fight week. And you said that when you fought Chad Mendes. Did you get a chance to really take that in this week and enjoy this experience of fighting in New York?
Yeah, I was absolutely loving this week. This is some place, New York. Like, the city is buzzing, and the fight fans were, like, I was treated like a king everywhere I went.
You got 155, 145, and 170. Is there a weight class that you feel most comfortable at now, kind of at your age and in your weight?
I feel good at all of them. I mean, I'm dominating them. I own the featherweight division. I'm at the dominating the 155 now. Do you know what I mean? So, I'm 170. I have no problem going to 170. I've been at 170. Obviously, it was against Nate, he was at 170 the second time, a real 170, but. And he's fought more at 155, but I've no problems. Like, that's what I'm sizing them up all week, saying they're not on my level either. So we'll see. Like I said, there's hurdles. So we'll decide when we decide.
Connor.
Can you say when the baby is due?
March, I think. About March, is it? May.
Is there any indication?
Is it?
May?
Sorry,
May or
I don't
March?
Know. It's not May, is it?
Is it May? Okay. Is there any indication?
It was March. What the fuck? I wouldn't even. No, I don't know. Look, I'm running from it, to be honest. I am crap on my jokes with the whole thing. I don't know what to be doing with myself.
Boy?
Sorry?
Do you know if it's a boy?
No, I don't know, Jack. I don't know nothing. I don't know. I'll figure that one out when that happens as well.
What you're saying about the UFC needing to talk to you, do you think there's any indication that they want to talk to you?
I mean. Look, I've been happy to just come and continue doing what I'm doing, continue on. I've outworn the other one, the previous contract. Now it's time for this. Now it's time for the reals. You know what I mean? I know I'm the highest paid already, but when I'm looking at what they're taking in and what like that list that Lorenzo and that team compiled to show the new owners, that's like the gospel right there. Do you know what I mean? That's proof of what I bring. So. You want me to come? You want me to be around, stick around, and help service that debt, and bring the and continue to push the company. Bring me on board for real, not just as this. You know, I need to be set for life with this. If you want me to be truly in on this, then I need to be all in on this proper as owner, or you know what I mean. I have an equity stake in the company, so that's what I'm looking for.
Connor, it sounds like impending fatherhood has made you more steadfast than ever in sort of chasing what you feel you're worth. Do you think it may also affect the length of time that you eventually fight for?
Look, 28's young, so we'll see. Like I said, fresh I am. Not a bother on me. So I could go again. I honestly could go again, no problem. So I'm just going to go chill for a bit, enjoy these two belts, have a couple of drinks with me fans. And that's it. I'm going to bounce now. So I just want to say thanks, everyone, to the media. I always respect all the work you do. I appreciate it all the time. And thank you. I'll see you when I see you. Thanks so much.
So what does come next for Conor McGregor? I mean, that's the question everybody wants to know. Sounds like he wants to take a little bit of time off, deservedly so. I'm sure the man has got a ton of money in the bank after what he's done as of late. Again, he's got a baby on the way. I'm sure he wants to be a part of that. Admit it. I thought that was kind of funny to admit that he was scared. I think any of us that are parents can relate to that. It is scary when you're about to welcome your first kid into the world. And hell, I guess it stays scary after that when you realize you have no idea what the hell you're doing. And you just pray that this little dude doesn't come out messed up because of you. So interesting times. You know, I guess we can just skip ahead real quick because it relates a lot. I mean, go to the prelims. Khabib Nurmagomedov defeating Michael Johnson. Oh, my God. Incredible. I mean, Michael Johnson came out looking fantastic. You know, just the speed was there. The striking was there. The big left hands were there. You know, he hurt Nurmagomedov. He looked good. And then Khabib just turns everything around, and this turns into an absolute ass-whipping. I mean, just dominant. Just dominant. You know, we could hear the talking that was going on from cage side. We could hear the shouting that Khabib had at Michael Johnson, you know, telling him to quit, to give up, you know, that Khabib wasn't going to stop until he gave up. Oh, my God. I mean, just an incredible performance. And so now you start thinking, all right, who's the number one contender at 155 pounds? Because Khabib Nurmagomedov, he's made his case known. I mean, he was on the mic afterwards, you know, talking about the Irish chicken. He was getting booed by everybody in that building and didn't give one damn about it. You know, talking about the size of the Irish market versus the size of the Russian market. And make no mistake, Khabib Nurmagomedov is a superstar in Russia. So, you know, he would move the needle in his home country. If the UFC is trying to come in and make a splash, giving Khabib Nurmagomedov a title shot in Russia especially would be a hell of a way to do it. So after a performance like that, I don't know how you can't say that the guy is deserving of being a number one contender, except that, as Conor McGregor said, he hasn't been the most active guy. All right, Nurmagomedov, we said it after the win last week. Tony Ferguson, how great did Tony Ferguson look in beating Rafael dos Anjos? Amazing. Maybe not as utterly terrifying as Nurmagomedov looked beating Michael Johnson, but it was an amazing performance, and Tony Ferguson has those 9 wins in a row. So to me, it's an incredibly interesting argument because I don't think there's necessarily a wrong answer. I think I still lean towards Tony Ferguson because of the number of wins he has, the streak that he's on, the fact that he's been active, the fact that, you know, he's been going in there and doing the damn thing. I feel like I got to give it to Nurmagomedov. I mean, I got to give it to Tony Ferguson. But Nurmagomedov, undefeated career record, that's insane. The mark that he has at 24-0, nuts. And the fact that he came in there and just destroyed Michael Johnson, I don't know that you can say that he's not the number one contender. And now you're in an interesting position because the UFC does want to go to Russia. Nurmagomedov is the guy to help him do it. Now, I mean, if you don't give him a title fight, is he going to be pissed off and sit out and not want to help you out? I don't know. I don't know. Could you do Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson as a you know, determined number one contender fight? I mean, I guess if you could go so crazy as to call it an interim title fight while we get things figured out with Conor McGregor. I don't think anybody's a fan of interim titles, but maybe that would be a way to appease Nurmagomedov and say, well, it is technically a title shot, you know? I don't know. I don't know what you do. This is where it gets interesting, and this is where it gets tricky, and this is where, you know, coming into the fight, UFC President Dana White said, Conor's got to give up one of these belts. Because you get into positions like this where you're trying to hold up 2 divisions, and that doesn't work. And hell, he might even be trying to hold up a 3rd division. So a lot of it's all going to depend on what Conor wants to do, and I know that's got to be frustrating. I said it, you know, I wanted to know today, November 13th, I wanted to know today what's happening with the featherweight title. I said it, and I still do. I feel like I still don't know what's going on with that belt at 145 pounds. I don't think Conor McGregor wants to go back to 145 now that he won. Had he lost, I think it would have been a nice, you know, fallback position. But now that he won, he has 2 belts, I can't see him wanting to go back to 145 pounds. You know, I don't know. I heard, I was talking on the plane back this morning, Kevin Ioli was saying he'd like to see the Diaz trilogy perhaps play out, but with the lightweight belt on the line this time. Do it at UFC 209, just so you had that tie-in. We know it's going to be in New York. That's a great place for the UFC. Conor McGregor likes it. A lot of Irish people there. You still got the 209 thing going on there, so you can tie it in. Interesting question for what comes next. You can't rule out the opportunity that Conor McGregor will move up to 170 pounds and try to fight Tyron Woodley. Tyron Woodley, of course, retained his welterweight title with a majority draw that was initially announced as a split decision win for Tyron Woodley over Stephen Wonderboy Thompson in what was really a fun fight of the night. I actually scored this fight for Tyron Woodley, and I think from the scores that I've seen so far, I'm kind of in the minority there, but I had him taking rounds 1, 3, and 4, and I definitely thought 4 was a 10-8. I think the fact that there were 2 judges that did not award that a 10-8 is a little bit appalling to me. That was a clear 10-8 round, so I actually gave the fight to Tyron Woodley despite losing the 5th round. I have no problem with those majority draw scores. The round 3 was the one that was super, super close. To me, I had Tyron Woodley taking it, just barely edging out Stephen Thompson that round, but I have no problem with it going the other way. The problem with those majority draw scores is they include a score that had a 10-8 in the first round and not a 10-8 in the fourth round, which is just bizarre to me. I don't get it at all. So, weird. Certainly, I'm sure you saw the way things played out. Bruce Buffer seemed to make a bit of a mistake there. It was interesting at cage side because nobody kind of knew what was going on. I for one, actually just stood up and was trying to get people's attention inside the cage, like, you know, Joe Silva, Dana White, trying to find out what the hell, because one of two things happened. You know, he read the scores out, 47-47, 47-47, 48-47, so the winner by split decision. So at that point, you've got two possibilities. Either A, he read the scores wrong and there should have been an extra 48-47 in there, or two, he's just reading the result wrong. So a bad night at the office, unfortunately, at least in that one moment for Bruce Buffer. I guess we all make our little screw-ups every now and then. He has just happened to be at UFC 205 and you know, standing in the center of the cage with all the world waiting to hear what the hell the result of this title fight was. But majority draw, I have no problem with that. I don't think I think that fight could definitely warrant a draw. I definitely think it does deserve a rematch as well. Tyron sounds like he's open to it. Wonderboy sounds like he wants it. Dana White sounds like he wants it. I think it makes all the sense in the world. Feel bad for Damian Maia. Got Damian Maia that flew up to New York. He was there. Apparently he'll be in Sao Paulo next week as well, so we'll get a chance to talk to him and kind of get his thoughts on the fight and what it feels like now that he's probably going to have to sit out. And then, of course, there's always the wild card of Conor McGregor coming up to 170 pounds. As crazy as that sounds, I don't think completely out of the realm of possibility, especially when you consider that, again, nothing's ever been given to Conor, but I do think he's very smart about the way he kind of picks and maneuvers his career. For instance, I think he would probably be more open to a 155-pound title fight with Tony Ferguson than he would be with Khabib Nurmagomedov. Not saying that he wouldn't take the fight with Khabib Nurmagomedov, but I think stylistically, matchup-wise, it would make a heck of a lot more sense for him to fight Tony Ferguson. So I would think, personally, that he would be a little bit more open to fighting Tony Ferguson at 155 pounds. Now, challenging for the 170-pound title. Tyron Woodley is not a huge guy at welterweight. He's big, he's thick, he's strong, he's muscular. He's got, you know, quick striking, no doubt about it, and he's got great wrestling. But he's not a huge guy. He wouldn't have, like, some kind of massive range. I think Wonderboy Thompson, despite it being a striking matchup, were he to have walked away with the belt and then maybe, you know, entertain the idea of fighting Conor McGregor, I think, you know, Stephen Thompson with that longer frame may have been a more difficult matchup, a more difficult fight for Conor McGregor simply because of the size. Tyron Woodley, Conor could still try to use that range to his advantage. So I don't think it's out of the possibility. I guess we'll just have to see what WEIMG says and how many percentage points Conor McGregor is bringing to the table when he says, I want to fight for a third belt, which would just be insanity. But to me, I think the fight I'd want to see is Tyron Woodley and Wonderboy again. I think you got to do the fight again. It was fun to me. Technical. Both guys stuck to the game plan. Wonderboy did what he does, comes in with that karate stance, hands down, throwing wild strikes, having fun, making it entertaining. Tyron Woodley, very patient. I think he knew that, you know, counter-striking was going to be his way, picking spots to get takedowns, trying to catch the leg, that sort of thing. Smart work. I did think it was weird how willing Tyron Woodley was to fight on the cage. Obviously, to me, it was part of the game plan. I mean, he was pretty much, you know, walking straight to there, going there. So I think, you know, and he mentioned it afterwards that if he has 30 feet in front of him, he knows there's 30 feet that he can drive forward for the takedown. I get it. But, man, against a striker like Wonderboy, you know, this is not boxing where you can kind of rope-a-dope a guy and you can go to the ring, you know, get against the ropes and then still be able to lean back to move away from these strikes. When you're against that cage, it's not forgiving. I mean, that's a wall right there. So when Stephen Thompson is coming at you with those crazy punches, kicks, knees, elbows, whatever, from all angles, yes, you can move laterally, but you can't move back. And so that's why I was surprised that he was willing to fight there. But he was, and he did enough to get the majority draw to retain his title. I know he wasn't exactly thrilled about it. The crowd certainly was not happy with the result. Man, poor Tyron Woodley was booed all week long. But Tyron still does hang on to his title. I think he's open to a rematch. I think that's probably what's going to happen next, according to UFC president Dana White. And, Tyron still gets to call himself a UFC champion for now. And I think, other than the fact that choke that he didn't get kind of ended up gassing out his arms and making him just kind of hang on for dear life in the fifth round, that's probably the one thing they'll have to look back and regret. I thought overall this was a good performance. And, let's hear a little bit from Tyron Woodley.
Can you just talk about, from your perspective, the whole post-fight, everything that went down there, them originally announcing you the winner and then going to a draw? What was just going through your mind while all that was unfolding?
It was a tough fight. I thought I won the fight. I thought, the fourth round, I believe when I almost had him finished, I thought they probably should have stopped the fight. I saw his eyes roll back. I was surprised they didn't stop it. It looks like in Eddie's fight, they stopped it a little bit sooner than mine. But, you keep fighting, you keep pushing forward. He's a tough guy. he recovered. I think I punched him one more time and woke him back up, and he revived with some energy. So, just in general, it was just a back-and-forth fight. And when they said that, I looked over like, hell no, I'm not about to give my belt away because I did not lose this fight. So I just felt real confident I won the fight. And I was just kind of a little bummed, that it was a draw because I felt like I clearly won the fight.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it's still a draw under record. Dana just said that he wants to do a rematch. He thinks that makes sense. Is that something that makes sense to you, just so you can, get the win without doubt?
Well, unlike the last fight when I won the belt and I got 20 seconds to think about it and everybody wanted to see who I'm fighting immediately next, I think I deserve this. Many of you guys didn't even pick me to win this fight. Many of the crowds was against me, so I'm going to talk to my management team. We're going to see what's next for me. I don't know if Mr. McGregor want to go for a third belt. Looked like he was talking a little noise in the back. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, finally, on the note of a third belt, Dana said that when he wanted his second in the cage, that you let them borrow it. Is that how it unfolded from your perspective, or
exactly.
What happened there? Was that?
Exactly. Just like that.
You had no problem with it?
Tyron, this fight, I was going to ask you about that, and how hard was for you to borrow your belt when he was so disrespectful and he said so many comments during the weekend, and we saw a video yesterday, you guys exchanging words and backstage the weigh-ins.
I'm a professional at the end of the day, and it's obvious that the majority of the crowd is here to see Conor McGregor, so he's built this mystique about himself that everybody wants to watch him fight and watch, his antics and all those things like that. So it's silly for me to try to go out there and turn the crowd on my side when I know 99.9% of the people are here to either watch Conor win or lose. So I'm just focused. I really took myself out of that after the actual real weigh-in. It was really no words actually said to me. Besides what's up, and then it was some social media stuff. But when I was in the back about to do the weigh-ins, like the ceremonial weigh-ins, I was just focusing on the fight because, just to be honest, if you want to get to me, you can get to me. Nobody. If I want to get to John Morgan, nobody in this room can stop me from getting to him, and that's just point blank. And I'm coming for you because I know you pick Wonderboy.
Two questions. One, regarding the fight itself, you had a hard time tagging him at some points. He was really evasive. What particular ways did you adjust, especially in round four, trying to get in a few extra punches, especially the heavy ones?
Who's ever had a good time hitting Wonderboy?
No, everyone.
Who's ever hit him like I did and almost finished him in that manner? I did a great training camp. I had guys, Chris Bang, former Strikeforce UFC veteran. He mimicked him to a T. I was so damn tired of seeing side kicks and crescent kicks and round the corner kicks. I was to the point where you saw I didn't get kicked one time in the head. I only got kicked in the leg a couple times. So I was overly prepared for that. I trained with Raymond Daniels. I trained with Sage Northcutt. I engrossed myself into his martial art because many people aren't even able to stop his first attack. So what do you do when you stop the first attack and you go to the second or third attack? So I put myself into that world, and I just felt like I had to be patient. I know the fans didn't appreciate it at times, but if you think about a 31-foot octagon, if I'm pushing him forward every single time, he can back up and counter-strike. But when I put myself against the octagon, I got 31 foot to drive his – I was going to say a curse word – drive his butt across the octagon and get the job done.
And finally, describe – getting your belt back, did Conor actually hand it to you, or did somebody have to?
I just want the drama, don't you?
Absolutely, yes.
The person that asked me to use the belt
issued the belt back to me.
Fair enough.
I have not seen Conor since he won his fight.
Fair enough.
Tyrone, good evening. Congratulations.
How you doing?
Good, thank you. One of the things you did very well tonight was to, as you say, to be patient and counter with your right over his left, yeah?
Yeah.
A lot. And that right hook looked like it was going to knock him out.
Yeah.
You know, in the second and third.
You didn't think he was out?
Maybe he was out, yeah. I thought you had a brilliant game plan. I wondered how much Duke Rufus had helped you in that process.
Duke Rufus helped a ton, you know, not only just with his background in sport karate, his brother and his dad who grew up teaching him that art form, so he knew how to beat that style, but he also was open-minded to me bringing in other coaches. Like, I brought in a national taekwondo, you know, training partner. I brought in Raymond Daniels. I brought in all these different guys. And he could have been like, hey, you know what? I got this. I got the training partners. You know, we got Eric Koch here. We got Anthony Pettis. These guys are more than sufficient to provide that look of Wonder Boy. But he was all about the task, all about winning the belt. So he really didn't, you know, mentally, you know, get the ego. So that's what I love about Duke. He don't sweat the technique. We just want the results.
I don't want to cause any drama, but just want to know what it will be like to knock Conor McGregor's head off. Obviously, you're a much bigger man. And just talk to us about what really has gone through your head, because it clearly has.
I mean, to be just straight up honest, Conor McGregor is a guy that fought at 145 ever in his life. I haven't weighed 145 since my sophomore year in high school. So if I beat him,
it would be like you bullying a boy.
I'm not going to say that because he's tall. He has long arms. He had good timing. And when you got, you know, good timing and things like that, you can place good punches. But I'm 100% positive he's never been hit with the shots I'll hit him with. Stevie Wonderboy has literally got my bid today because I hit him with some stuff and he recovered from it. I just don't think Conor understands the pressure I can put on him, the power I can put on him, and all the different attacks. So I think it's good for media, but in general, I don't know how I can win. If I beat him, everybody's going to say I was supposed to beat him. He was a former featherweight. If I lose to him, then obviously we know what's going to happen there.
But do you think the fight will happen?
I mean, if he wants to fight, I mean, we can sign it right now. I'm good on the fight. I mean, I just don't think it's a good idea for him to fight me.
All right. Now, we should say that UFC President Dana White actually stopped by the press conference for a little bit. And that's becoming an increasingly rare treat to have Dana White, you know, in the media and doing interviews. He's kind of become a little bit more reclusive and a little bit more selective in when he comes out and speaks to the media. But I think this was one that, he just wanted to kind of bask in the glory a little bit. It sounds like, you know, the pay-per-view record was set for the UFC. The gate record was set for Madison Square Garden. This was a fight that everybody had wanted to happen for a long, long time. Being in New York, being at Madison Square Garden, and again, as we said, it was incredibly entertaining from start to finish. So he did come by, answer questions, did pretty good. Was a struggle for me to get the damn microphone for a little bit. The Madison Square Garden PR staff was actually helping out, kind of run the press instead of the UFC PR staff. So it was difficult to get their attention. They're not quite as nice to me as the UFC PR staff is, who's always kind of willing to hand me the microphone. So struggled a little bit, but we did get in some good questions, and I figured, hey, it's been so long since we've heard from Dana White, and he touched on such a big number of topics that you'd probably want to hear that. So let's just waste a little time and let you hear from the boss, UFC President Dana White.
Dana, the first thing I wanted to ask you was the ridiculousness of this ban in New York. And you know what? Nobody died tonight. Nobody had a traumatic brain injury. Nobody had anything happen.
Right.
And I wonder, you know, if that makes you look back at how ignorant these lawmakers were here in keeping MMA out of this state for 19 years.
It wasn't ignorant. It was dirty politics is what it was. You know, everybody knows the story. For those of you that don't, the Fertittas, my old partners, own the fourth largest gaming company in Nevada. And the Las Vegas Culinary Union is what kept us out of here. And Shelley Silver. So that's really why we weren't here. But on a lighter note, because of all the, you know, 8 years of dirty politics that went on, you know, and I would like to thank the Las Vegas Culinary Union for spending their members' dues to help make this the biggest night ever in UFC history. Thank you, dummies.
And the other thing I wanted to ask you to follow up on that, even when they approved it, the state legislature approved it.
Right.
You had those
comments that they were making that were way over the top about the injuries and all the stuff that would happen.
Where are they now?
Right, and that's what I'm asking you is, like, you know, do you think that, you know, maybe finally MMA can get acceptance and not have to go through this type of stuff?
Yeah, well, as soon as the Fertittas were gone, they scattered like roaches onto the next one, you know, some other way to mess with the Fertittas, and they're done with the UFC. So it was disgusting and whatever, but sitting here tonight, we broke every record in UFC history tonight. Every record The only one I'm waiting on now is the Fox number, you know? How did Fox Sports 1 do? And it would be really, really weird and make no sense if we didn't break that record, too. So,
Dana, right,
turned here. Out good for us.
Dana.
Yeah.
How was the first off? How was the pay-per-view numbers? How are they trending right now?
Very good.
You think you broke?
We broke the record.
Okay. And so overall, kind of, what's your kind of thought of UFC 205? Kind of how the fighters looked, how Conor looked out there, and
Conor special. I mean, everybody's been saying, wait till he faces a wrestler. You know, he throws that left hand with no effort, but boy, when it touches people, they go. It's unbelievable.
A lot of confusion in the cage afterwards with the lack of the two belts. I know you guys ran.
Whoa. Just for the record, I'm not supposed to bring his belt. He's supposed to bring his belt. Right? He's yelling at me because I don't have his belt. I'm like, no, you're supposed to bring your belt, and I give you the new belt. Sure. So we went back there, and Tyron Woodley gave us his belt. So
has Conor given it back to Tyron Woodley?
Huh? He got it back, yeah.
So he
let us borrow his belt.
What did you say to Conor in the cage? You after he got the belt, you went up to him and you said something to him. What did you say kind of at that point after you gave him that second belt?
I don't even remember.
Thanks, Dana.
Thank you.
Hi, Dana.
Hi.
I'm with CNBC. A question I have for you. Some of these tickets priced for more than $18,000 today. Do you guys think you might be pricing out fans who do want to come see the show? Because this was a really big fight and the tickets did sell for a lot.
We definitely price fans out. I mean, there's no doubt that did happen. Not one of my favorite things to do, but basically there's this thing that happens right now. It's no different than, like, it's dynamic pricing. It's no different than, you know, a plane ticket. You know, when there's so much demand, the plane ticket goes up. That's what happened. But the place was sold out. It was packed to the rafters. We broke the Madison Square Garden, you know, record, which I don't think will ever be broken again. Jesus is going to have to fight the devil to break that record, man. I just don't see what does it, but yeah.
And then a follow-up question I had for that. Like we said, MMA is returning after nearly a 20-year ban. So economically, what do you think UFC can bring to New York in the coming years?
It's what I've been saying since day one. I mean, if you look at, you know, how many people were here from other countries in different parts of the United States, they're staying in hotels, they're eating in restaurants every night, they're shopping in the stores. The economic impact for the city of New York was outrageous, you know? You guys done with me?
No. obviously, a little bit of controversy with Wonderboy and Woodley and how that played out. Well, not necessarily controversy, but confusion more than anything else.
It wasn't. I think what happened was they were really trying to make sure those scores were totaled right, and you know, you don't want to mess that up. And even when we came back, you could tell Tyrone thought we were going to say, "Oops," you know, Wonderboy won, but it was a draw. And when you look at that fight, you know, you could call that fight. I actually had it even going into the fifth round. But my opinion doesn't mean shit, so.
I guess one place it does matter, though, is what happens next with those two guys.
You rematch them, man. I think that it was a draw, and the fight was ridiculous. It was the fight of the night. You do it again.
That leaves Damian Maia, I think, on the outside looking in. What would you do with him? Ask him if he wants to wait? Let him fight?
Damian Maia's right there, man, so. You know, he'll get the next shot if he wants to fight somebody else or whatever. I don't know. And again, it's the night of the fight. I hate to make fights the fight of the night. I don't do it, but that one makes sense. I think it makes sense.
The other two big questions, of course, Conor. I guess we can't wait to talk to him and find out what he wants to do next. But,
right.
But what do you see? I mean, you guys had very differing opinions about the future of his career. You're saying he's got to – well, you said that he needed to give up a belt. He's saying you're going to have to get an army together to take one of those belts away.
Yeah.
Where do you stand right now? I mean, with the star as bright as him, could he find a way to maybe do both these?
There's moves? No. Listen, I've never dealt with anybody like this kid on so many different levels. You know, normally he walks out of the octagon and goes, I want to fight this guy next. Nobody does that. Nobody has ever done that. Nobody's ever walked out of the octagon and told me they want, you know, they want to turn right around and fight again. He does. And who knows? I'm going to let him enjoy this night and enjoy it, and we'll talk business later.
So that mean maybe you're softening your stance a little bit?
No.
And just last question, Khabib Nurmagomedov had an incredible performance tonight. He had some pretty strong words for Conor. I think he had a couple of words for you as well, maybe over there.
I didn't hear what he said.
Okay, well, what do you think? Where does he stand? I mean, does he deserve to fight
That guy was screaming at me in between every round. Give me that fucking belt, and yelling all. I was yelling back to him, finish this fight first. How about you in 30 seconds, you got to deal with him. And every round he's screaming at me, you know. I get it. Understood. You want a title shot. I get it. We'll figure it out.
So do you have an idea? Because Tony Ferguson had an amazing performance just a week ago.
I agree.
Do you have an opinion on which guys?
It's a good problem to have.
Dana, I'm curious. Have you had a chance to speak with Lorenzo since the fight ended tonight?
Lorenzo was texting me all night. Yeah. Okay. Frank was here tonight, and Lorenzo was texting me all night.
And can you share with us anything that he said to you?
He said, that was a majority draw. What are you guys doing?
And obviously, you guys have been through a lot together. What part of you wishes that he could have been here tonight with you to see the whole thing through and, you know?
You know what? The thing is, you know, I've told this story a million times. I was a mess when this whole deal went down. And then, you know, this guy who's been my, you know, close friend since high school looked at me and said, Dana, I'm done. Be happy for me. So he's in South Bend. He went to his son's football game today, Notre Dame, and he's doing what he wants to do now. No matter what happens from here, you know, no matter what Ari and I do, no matter how big this thing gets, nobody from here on out throughout the history of this sport forever will have contributed more to this sport than the Fertittas have. You know, it's easy to get into this sport now, right? We're breaking records at Madison Square Garden. The numbers are through the roof. Everything's crazy. They were doing this at a time where it didn't look good and it didn't look like the money was going to come back to them, yet they kept pumping money in. There will never be bigger contributors to this sport ever than the Fertitta brothers. So,
Dana, Wall Street Journal, two quick questions for you. One is...
Hey, where were you this week?
I was here.
We got no coverage from you guys at all.
There was an interview with Dana White in the Wall Street Journal today.
I missed it. All right.
All right.
Sorry. Go ahead.
All right. It was a good interview.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, first question is, did you have to pay a curfew fine tonight? From the garden?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
And then is that what they normally do if you go too late?
Well, usually with concerts, I don't know how it works with sports, but concerts, it's 11, and it's 10,000 a minute.
Holy shit, I hope we don't have to pay that. Ouch. Yeah, oh God, I hope not.
And then the second thing is, you know, in full sum, why was Conor perfect for this specific event in New York?
You know, there's a lot of Irish here in this town, a lot of Irish history, and he wanted to fight here so bad. This was like a huge dream of his, and it's just he was made for this event. Plus, that flight from Ireland's way shorter than Vegas, you know. Hey,
Kenny Johnson, Ring TV. Two questions. One, top this fight, we ever think about going to a stadium, go to Croke Park in Ireland, or go down the south to Jerry World in Dallas and try to top the attendance record with a big card with maybe Conor and Ronda on it?
we've thought about Dallas, Texas Stadium. We thought about Croke Park. We talked about that forever. Ari and I are going to Russia in the next couple of weeks. We're working on Russia. We're working on China. We're making some real big moves here in the next several months.
And the whole thing with Ronda, her showing up out the blue and not speaking, is that something that she's going to do coming up to the next fight?
That was, first of all, she was never supposed to speak, and neither was Amanda. My production guys screwed that thing up. And the thing that, you know, it made Ronda look bad again, like she just stormed off and didn't do it. She was not supposed to do an interview. They were supposed to go up there, square off, and they're both supposed to walk away. So.
Why'd you grab her by the arm?
Huh? Because what I was doing, so they squared off, and then I was getting them to face forward, and I was waiting for somebody to bring Amanda's belt. You know how we do that? To put the belt so then that you guys could take the pictures of them moving forward. And then I grab her and I turn around, she's in, and Rogan's interviewing her, right? I was trying to get them to stand forward and then somebody bring Amanda the belt. Hey, we're not perfect all the time. We actually, our team coming into this big event, we made a lot of mistakes at this event that I'm not happy about. Not stuff that you would notice, but I try to be perfect, but it didn't work out. Is she going to talk? Huh? Rhonda? Rhonda's been talking. She was on Ellen. She's doing Kimmel. She's doing all the talk shows. Is she going to talk to you guys? I don't know. Huh? Yeah.
Dana over here. What did you think of the Carolina and Joanna fight? Also, are you going to give Carolina her wish and give her that rematch in Poland in 2017?
Yeah, that fight was awesome. I mean, both those girls wanted that fight really bad. Carolina is a girl. Joanna wanted her here and wanted to fight her. And both girls had hematomas tonight. Joanna had a broken nose. And these two, it was a stylistic, technical dogfight. Man, it was awesome. Great fight. Rematch, Carolina wants the rematch real bad. Her guys have been all over me. We'll see what happens. I think we do Claudia Gadella and Carolina and see what happens. But again, I don't like making fights the night of the fight, so we'll see what happens. Hey, what's up, buddy?
Indiana, right over here.
Yeah.
Thoughts on Raquel Pennington's performance tonight against Misha Tate, and thoughts on Misha Tate retiring. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, so Raquel has looked better and better and better every time she fights. She's looking really good. And, no, I didn't see the Misha Tate thing coming, but, you know, it makes sense. Misha has... Misha's been so tough and durable and not a tough, durable one, but a tough, durable athlete. Been in this for so long, and, you know, I could just tell when I talked to her tonight, her and I had a little bit of a thing tonight. You know, she was refusing to go to the hospital. And I'm like, you're going to the hospital. She's like, fuck you, I don't work for you anymore. So, yeah, I was like, that's a good point, but... you need to go to the hospital. So she's upset, and she's very emotional. But, you know, I care about Misha a lot, and I think she's going to do just fine in her life after fighting, you know. I said, listen, then I had to start begging. If you go to the hospital tonight, I'll get you another job doing something else, you know. Then I can be your boss again. So she went, yeah. She has to go, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Dane over here. Yoel Romero, Michael Bisping, we saw there was a bit of an exchange during the broadcast, but is that set in stone?
I didn't see that, yeah, okay.
Is that, Michael.
But yeah, that's the fight that makes sense. I mean, he beat Chris Weidman tonight.
Is that UFC 206, or is that off the table? Is it any, are we looking at next?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know when, but yeah, that's the fight.
And one more question. It was an interesting moment when Bruce Buffer left the octagon, went out to double check the announcement and came in and sort of gave the wrong one. Do you know what exactly happened there?
Yeah, I think that the commission was trying to be correct. They were adding up the scores again. I don't know if somebody started to add and thought that it was wrong or whatever the deal was. They, you know, they messed it up. They just wanted to make sure that they got that thing right, so we had to come in and do it again. It rarely ever happens in the UFC. It happened one time, no big deal. Listen, it would have been a major, major screw-up if it was the other way around. Like, we had to say, oops, you didn't win, he won, and switched the belt. That would have been real bad. So it worked out all right.
So as always, Dana, free to tell you what he thinks about a couple of things. It does sound like Yoel Romero will be getting the title fight with Michael Bisping. He talked about some other fights as well. Interesting stuff. Ferguson, Nurmagomedov, you know, didn't want to lean one way or the other. And of course, the big question is going to be Conor McGregor. Now, we'll go through some of those fights in a second. The third and final title fight, Joanna Jędrzejczyk picked up a unanimous decision win over Karolina Kowalkiewicz. Convincing win. You know, I heard some people kind of critical of Joanna, didn't like that. I liked it. Speed, technical, precise. I thought she dominated the fight, save for that one moment in the fourth round where Karolina landed the big right hand. Joanna said after the fight she was hurt, or she was not hurt. I beg to differ with her. I think she was hurt pretty badly. I think that, you know, I wouldn't say that she was lucky to survive. I mean, she worked to battle, to slow things down, to regain her wits. And, you know, it was one bright moment for Karolina Kowalkiewicz, but I think people were just so proud of her because she was so scrappy. I mean, just getting chopped apart on the legs and obvious speed disadvantage, and she just continued to press forward no matter what, tried to make this a fight. Impressive stuff from her. Showed a lot of heart, a lot of guts. I think, honestly, she probably, as crazy as it sounds, despite having basically one good moment in the fight, I think she earned herself a rematch somewhere down the line. Now, not right away. I don't want to see him do it again right away. I think, you know, some other contenders out there that deserve an opportunity first. And, you know, I'd like Karolina to go get a little more seasoning as well. I mean, I think a little bit more experience would help. You know, she's been in there now for 25 minutes. She said she wants the rematch in Poland. I think that probably would make some sense, but I don't want to see it right away. But I do think the fact that she rocked Joanna and really had her in trouble for a minute probably earned her another shot at the belt. It means that's, you know, something that the UFC can look back on and be like, hey, look, you know, look how she hurt her. This is the first one to really rock her and that sort of thing. So I think a rematch in Poland would be great. You know, the UFC didn't really do so hot in that market the first time around. Didn't sell a ton of tickets. You know, it wasn't the most star-studded card ever, but to do a rematch of that fight in Poland, maybe sometime in late 2017, maybe early 2018, depending on how things play out, but I think that would be pretty cool. Yoel Romero defeated Chris Weidman. Man, tough night for Chris Weidman. This was a night he had wanted forever. He had helped lobby the commission to get this thing in place. Not just the commission, the government, rather, to get this thing approved. And special night for him. You could see it. You know, he walked in, took a little extra moment to soak in the energy and to soak in what was happening in front of him, and then just faced what is a beast of a man in Yoel Romero. Was doing pretty well. I think Chris Weidman, you know, they were even on the scorecards going into third and final round, and then Yoel just unleashed that brutal knee that scored direct, sliced open a cut over the eye of Chris Weidman and certainly left him stunned on the ground. And then Romero, so explosive and powerful, just jumped on top with additional punches and sealed the result. Third round TKO, 24 seconds. And then an incredible scene. Hopefully you saw it. where Michael Bisping was on the commentary desk. And as Yoel Romero was, you know, going through and talking about why he deserves a title shot and why he's next, basically Michael Bisping just flipped him off. And the cameras were wise enough to catch it, put it on the broadcast, and start some heat there. Of course, you heard Dana White saying that does look like the fight. Yoel Romero, Michael Bisping. Man, that is a tough matchup for Michael Bisping. I mean, Yoel Romero, that is an absolute beast. And, you know, he does tend to have cardio issues, but he looked pretty good in the third round of this fight. You know, I think he conserved a ton of energy along the way, but looked good. Would he be able to accomplish the same in a five-round fight against Michael Bisping, who has a high work rate? But certainly not the type of power that Yoel Romero brings to the table. Certainly not the type of wrestling either. I don't know, man. That's a scary one for Mike Bisping. But I know he's not afraid of stepping in there against any man. So we'll see when that fight comes together. Starting out the main card, Raquel Pennington defeated Miesha Tate. Kudos to Raquel Pennington. Outworked Miesha Tate. Simple as that. Outworked Miesha Tate. You know, I thought Tate was going to be the better fighter coming into this. Not by a wide margin. I know the records would seem to indicate otherwise, but I think Raquel Pennington has been slowly improving, and Miesha Tate has just looked off late. You know, I don't know if it's disinterest. I don't know if it's injury. I don't know what it is. But just completely got outworked in this fight, and kudos to Raquel Pennington. And, of course, afterwards, Miesha Tate decided to call it a career. It was interesting because I was kind of looking at Brian Caraway's body language while she was announcing it, just to kind of see. And just the way that he was kind of looking down at the ground and shaking his head. I don't think they were expecting that decision to be made. I don't think they were expecting her to call it a career, that maybe she was even thinking about it. So, shocking there. And, of course, she's still young. She could change her mind. Things could change. But as for now, she's done. And if so, listen, played a huge part in the women's game. You know, certainly not as big of a superstar as Ronda Rousey, but right there, I would say, honestly, right now, Miesha Tate is a top 5 to top 8, maybe top 10 at worst, biggest star in MMA. And that may sound crazy, but I'm telling you, it's the truth. From a website operator's point of view, from how many clicks she gets, from how much fan interest she gets, she's right there. Top 8, top 10 at worst. Now, does some of it have to do with her looks? I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does. Absolutely. But the things that she's accomplished, what she's been a part of, the fact that, you know, she was a huge part of Ronda Rousey's rise to success. I mean, she was that enemy, that foil that was needed to help elevate Ronda Rousey. That was huge. And I mean, you can never take away the fact that Misha was a UFC champion. I mean, that win over Holly Holm, the pictures, the images, the scenes of the scream and the emotion that she had, you know, after she was able to submit Holly Holm and pick up that victory. Amazing, man. Just a hard worker, always a professional. She was always great in interviews and in media obligations and everything she ever did. Just always a class act. And this is it for her. I'm sure she will find some opportunities on television. I believe WME IMG will probably be able to get her a gig on a desk somewhere. But, you know, I do think this is one of those ones where you go, eh, maybe she steps away for a while, realizes it was kind of an emotional decision, and changes things up a bit. So we'll see. All right, look, preliminary card. Frankie Edgar. I don't know what else to say other than this dude, I just don't see how you're not a fan of Frankie Edgar. My God, I mean, again, a special night for him as well, fighting in the Garden, a New Jersey guy. This is right around the corner from him, but he knows how big of it is for you know, the Garden, what a special place that is. And just an incredible fight, a Frankie Edgar fight. You know, coming in there, doing the movement, cutting the angles, doing all the right things, and then still getting tagged anyway. Still getting tagged anyway. Still suffering the power of Jeremy Stephens, because Jeremy Stephens is a beast. Head kick nearly knocked out Frankie Edgar. There's no doubt about it. And the punches that Jeremy Stephens was throwing from start to finish were just, unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. And Frankie Edgar was in survival mode, but it seems like even when he's in survival mode, he's pushing in and trying to engage and trying to strike. And there's just nothing better than watching a Frankie Edgar fight, man. The guy, I believe, according to Mike Bond, is now been in the game longer, or been in the cage, I should say, like third longest of all time. I don't know. It's crazy. It's over 5 hours in there. It's nuts, man. I'm a Frankie Edgar fan, man. Turns out afterward he had a torn MCL. Turns out he had an epidural in his back at some point. But I don't know. Just rough. And now he wants to fight again in Brooklyn. I can't lay enough superlatives. The guy is a future UFC Hall of Famer. And now what's next for him? We don't know. Still got that 145-pound division. Still got to have Conor McGregor decide what he wants to do. Still got to have Jose Aldo decide what he wants to do. But this, to me, was just a scintillating performance from Frankie Edgar. The guy is an absolute professional, and I just can't lay enough praises in his direction. I just love watching the guy fight, and I guess I'm a fan. I guess, you know, it's funny. People say, I get that question all the time, who's your favorite fighter? Who's your favorite fighter? It's so hard. I mean, how do you have a favorite fighter when it's, number one, it's your job. You're just, you're grinding week in and week out. I've always said that Cowboy Cerrone is probably, if I had to pick one, it'd probably be Cowboy, just because of the style he brings to the table, the attitude that he has about really not giving a damn about anything other than just fighting. I love that. But I'll tell you what, man, Frankie Edgar's got to be on that list. He's an absolute beast. And just the things he's been able to do in his career were great. And let me just say, I thought Jeremy Stephens looked good, man. I know that he lost his fight, according to the judges, 30-27, 30-27, 29-28. I actually had it 29-28. But I thought he looked good, man. I mean, a guy that's kind of been a middle-of-the-pack guy. In fact, you know, I was talking to Brett Okamoto during this fight. He was sitting next to me on press row, and he had kind of the same feeling. And then looking on the internet, it seems like a lot of people just didn't think that at all. But I thought Stevens looked good, man. I mean, he's fighting an upper-echelon guy, top-tier guy in Frankie Edgar, and competing right with him, nearly winning the fight, pushing it till the very end, throwing everything with just reckless abandon, just incredible power. Man, I thought Jeremy Stephens looked good. I think he's still got some big fights for him in the future in this division. But Frankie Edgar was the one that was able to pull it out, and definitely think you got to give the answer a chance to talk.
Frankie, huge victory for you tonight. Obviously, you know, this was a big, big event for you. Just describe from your emotions off that fight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what better place to do it than Madison Square Garden? You know, I grew up coming to the city my whole life. You know, I'm a Jersey guy. Been training at Henzo's for a very long time. So what better place to do it than right next door?
What do you think is the importance of the UFC being here nearly 20 years after MMA was banned?
I mean, it's the media cap of the world, you know. It's the world's most famous city. If you make it here, you can make it anywhere. You know what I'm saying? So I'm glad to be a part of it.
Frankie, what was going through your head when they were chanting your name?
I just felt the love, you know. Definitely feed off that energy. A lot of them were my good friends and family, so it's nice to be able to perform in front of them.
It looked like you were hurt potentially in that fight.
Think so?
Yeah. How do you feel?
Yeah, I honestly, I've been hurt in the past, as you guys know, and I was bounced back pretty good. I actually bounced back quicker than I thought. In between rounds, I was 100% with it. I don't know if I necessarily knew it was a head kick that did that, but I bounced back fast.
You know, is there anything about Stevens that surprised you tonight as an opponent?
Not really, man. I knew he was going to be a hard hitter. I know he's bigger than me. You know, I know he probably came in at least 10 pounds heavier than me tonight. So, but, you know, that's as such with a Frankie Edgar fight.
Was that follow-up knee? Was that follow-up knee after the kick? Did that hurt you? Because it appeared very illegal. Or do you remember that?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I didn't even know I got hit with a knee, really. So, I guess didn't hurt me enough.
Are you staying at 45 or are you going to go down?
Right now, I mean, I'm staying at 45. I don't know, man. We'll see. Right now, 45. We'll see what tomorrow says. What I say tomorrow.
What about a Dominic Cruz fight?
Yeah, hey, you know, he's got a fight ahead of him. We'll see what happens with that one, and maybe we can make a choice after that.
When do you start remembering after the kick and the knee?
But when I was back, I mean, I got to go back and watch it. But when I went back to the corner, I was coherent. I was 100% with it, and you know, my corner was trying to like, hey, you here? And I'm like, yeah, I'm with you guys.
Did you feel the pressure more in this fight, say, compared to other fights with you coming off a loss to Aldo and fighting in New York for the first time?
You know, no, I put so much pressure on myself. My first fight ever was an underground fight here in New York, and the pressure still feels the same because. You know, I'm pretty tough on myself, and I didn't want to go walk away without a W tonight.
And how much did it help having Eddie Alvarez also on this card? You guys training, getting ready together at the same time?
And yeah, it's huge. It's motivating. You know, you look across the room and see a guy that's struggling just like you are for the same night. And, you know, me and Eddie came up since, 2005, 2006. So it's fitting that we're both on the card together, along with Caitlin, Chris Weidman, and Rafael Natal.
Are you celebrating tonight? It must be a big one.
Yeah, I mean, a hotel room with my friends and family, man. I'm not a big party guy, so I'll definitely put a couple back, though.
In that round where you took the knee, at the end of the round, you pulled it around, and it looked like you were going for another submission. You looked up at the clock, saw there was about 18 seconds or so. Did you think that you were going to sink that?
Yeah, it was close. You know, I thought I almost had it. You know, he rolled to his back, and I let go and went for a one-handed guillotine. I think maybe I should have stuck with both hands, but, you know, hey. Gave it a shot.
How was Jeremy Stevens as opponent? Was this the guy you trained for, or was there anything surprise you out there?
Nice guy I trained for. I knew he was going to throw big bombs. I knew he was going to, you know, plant his feet and look, take my head off. My coach has always had me prepared, and tonight was no different.
There's already another card lined up in New York, the Brooklyn card. Or is that something you're going to be able to get on?
Yeah, that's what I said to Dana right away. You know, I was a little hyped up in there. I got to see how I feel tomorrow, but, it seems like it would make sense for me.
Any particular opponent?
Yeah, I don't know right yet, you know. I mean, shit, hopefully Connor, if he wants to come back down to 45 and he wants to give me that title shot. But we'll see what happens.
Do you think that he should, after whether or not he wins or loses this fight, have to go back and defend that belt?
Yeah, I think whether he wins or loses, he should have to defend the 45 first before he does anything at 55, unless he wants to give the 55-pound title up.
How do you feel about him if he should win, keeping both belts?
Listen, that's not my position to make that. You know, I think it's going to be the UFC. But I do think no matter what, if he does keep it, he has to defend the 45 first before he does 55.
So Frankie Edgar wants to fight in Brooklyn. Book it now, right? Just get him a fight. No reason you don't put him on that card. All right, carrying on. Tim Boetsch, first round knockout of Rafael Natal. Bummer for Rafael Natal. You know, lived in New York for a long time. Of course, a Brazilian native. This was a big one for him. But, Tim Boetsch. You could just sense it coming, man. He was just missing. Finally able to dial it in and score the big TKO win there. Big one for Tim Boetsch, a guy that all of a sudden has put together a couple wins. Got a little something going right now. A guy that's been around forever. And this was a big win for him. Another one, Vicente Luque. Man, what a devastating finish to Bilal Muhammad. Vicente Luque, he's got a little something going right now as well. The dude is dangerous. He's got some first-round finishes in a row. Good stuff, man. Really, really good stuff. But the highlight of the prelims for me was the Jim Miller fight over Tiago Wiles. Another guy, a veteran in Jim Miller, who not that long ago looked like he was done. You know, looked like he was on the wrong side of his career, and came in against a very tough Thiago Alves. We talked about the weight issues coming in for Thiago to miss weight, and Jim had to know that there was a possibility that Thiago wasn't going to make 155. He struggled to make 170 in the past, so to know that going in, and then to have the whole situation where Jim had to actually put on weight to save the fight. And to do that willingly against a guy that's coming down from another division just shows you the type of class act that Jim Miller is and the type of tough dude that he is. And, man, Thiago's throwing bombs. The kicks that he was throwing, the punches that he was throwing, definitely looked like the size had something to do with it. The power was there. It was incredible. This was another great fight. And Jim Miller, another guy that kind of having, like, a little bit of a career resurgence right now, and it's fantastic because – one of the best guys in the game as well. Just super professional. Always a pleasure to talk to. And has just been around forever. It's amazing to see guys kind of get these longevity records that they have. And, of course, Liz Carmouche defeat Caitlin Chookagian by split decision in the opening fight of the night. I thought it was a clear Liz Carmouche fight. Chookagian is tough, and I think she's got some upside to her. But Carmouche, resurgent in her comeback. She'd been away for a while, and setting history, of course. First fight, first win in Madison Square Garden, so that was pretty cool. All right, listen, UFC 205. I want to talk a little bit about everything because, good God, amazing card, super fun. But you got to circle it back to Conor McGregor. I mean, come on, defeating Eddie Alvarez, lightweight title. Let that soak in. Let it soak in. It's crazy. It's a crazy world that we live in. Oh man, it is special, and I know that we're gonna get rolling right away. I mean, as I sit here on Sunday, I know that I've got to do my laundry because I leave for Brazil on Tuesday. I got to repack and get ready to go, and I leave for Brazil on Tuesday, and half my team is going to Belfast for an event over there. So there's gonna be two cards next week. So I mean, this thing of MMA is constantly moving forward. It's always moving on, and the news cycle starts all over again. But I'm telling you, this is a special moment that should not be forgotten. Love or hate Conor McGregor, this is the type of moment that will be part of the history books forever and should be remembered and should be enjoyed and should be soaked in. And as I said earlier, stop it with the doubt, damn it. If there's some fights you want to see, push for them. That's great. You know, you want to see the Khabib Nurmagomedov fight? Hey, that's a tough matchup for Conor McGregor. I think, honestly, the Tony Ferguson fight might be more fun. But what do you want to see? Do you want to see fun, or do you want to see Conor McGregor get tested like maybe nobody's ever tested him before? I don't know. Or would Conor get in Khabib's head? Khabib's already got a chip on his shoulder, and there's no doubt about it. Would Conor be able to get in his head a little bit, throw him off his game? Although, what would he do? Just be more aggressive? I have no idea. I don't know what an office game Khabib Nurmagomedov would look like. Or do you want to go back to featherweight? Do you want to figure? Because I'm telling you, I'm sticking to my guns. I do want to know what the hell is going on with that featherweight belt. I guess I realized that with him winning, you got to let him soak it in a little bit. But we got to hear about that pretty soon. So we'll certainly be following that story. We need to know. I don't think he can wait 3 months. You know, you got guys in the featherweight division that want to know what the hell is going on with that title. So we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. And, of course, Tyron Woodley. Is he in the mix? Is he in the mix for a Conor McGregor fight? I mean, it seems insane. But Conor going for 3 titles? Don't think it wouldn't happen. If he wants to do it, it's going to happen. That's the cash cow, baby. All right. Listen, hopefully you enjoyed it. UFC 205 was an amazing card. If you didn't see it, you got to see it. It was something special. I am going to be back out on the road this week, and Cold Coffee will finally be back with me. So if you've been missing Cold Coffee, and I know you have. I like to have my partner in crime there. We've had some great people filling in. Hopefully you haven't hated me too much on these moments where I've had to go solo, but I'll be happy to have Cold Coffee back in the mix. There's no doubt about it. If nothing that, just so I don't have to produce anything. Let him take care of all the technical stuff. So anyway, all right, listen. Hit me up anytime. You guys, I don't talk about it much, but if you want to hit me up on Twitter at MMA Junkie John, do that. Instagram, I try to do at the MMA Roadshow. I try to keep up with it a little bit. I'm not very good at keeping up with the comments, but I try. Facebook, I kind of suck at being a Facebook friend, but you can add me. I'm not very good. I use Facebook mainly to see pictures of my kid who's living in Mexico right now, as I said before. And, of course, when I'm traveling around the world, I just like to see him. But, hey, you can add me there. We'll try to talk. No big deal. I'll be your friend. Or, as always, you know, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can rate us and review us there. You can leave us a comment. I always love the reviews there. I'll read them out. I like hearing your feedback. Hopefully you dig it. I enjoy doing it. And that's all that matters, right? Nah. It matters that you enjoy it too. So if you are, tell me. Anyway, I got to get some damn sleep. I flew home on no sleep. I got a little bit on the plane, but come on. We all know that's not great sleep. Frosty beverages are going to be enjoyed this afternoon. Maybe a little Dallas Cowboys football. And heading to Sao Paulo on Tuesday. We'll have you taken care of there. I imagine me and Cold Coffee will have something for you. I bet Fernando Proches will probably check in too. In the meantime, thanks for listening.